Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Wednesday, April 19, 2017. Mike Pence, Donald Trump's vice president, addressed U.S. and Japanese sailors on the USS Ronald Reagan aircraft carrier today. He said Donald Trump will be the best friend American armed forces ever had. Pence is on a 10-day Asia tour. Yesterday, after meetings in Japan, Pence said the U.S. would work with Japan, China, and other nations to get North Korea to give up its atomic weapons program. Then he visited a Buddhist temple. You'd think this would have chilled out war rhetoric, but today, aboard the USS Ronald Reagan, Pence said the U.S. will stand up to its enemies with its allies and that the nuclear option is not off the table. Here's Mike Pence aboard the USS Ronald Reagan today.
We will uphold international rules and norms, promote peaceful diplomatic dialogue to address issues of regional and international concern, and we will defend human rights because the dignity and worth of every person is an eternal value of the United States of America. Under President Trump, the United States will faithfully defend all that we hold dear, for we know that if we falter, the light of truth and freedom in the world could swiftly be extinguished. We gather here today on this deck and in this place as storm clouds gather on the horizon. On Monday, I traveled to the front lines of freedom, where the vibrancy of a free South Korea meets directly the repression of North Korea. At the demilitarization zone, I met with the brave men and women who watch over that land day and night. They know what you who stand in the gap in this region already know. North Korea is the most dangerous and urgent threat to the peace and security of the Asian Pacific. For more than a generation, North Korea's leaders have sought to develop nuclear weapons and the ballistic missiles on which to deliver them. They have impoverished their people and embittered the region in their pursuit of this dangerous goal. For more than two decades, from the agreed framework of 1994, the six-party talks in the year 2003-09, to the strategic patience of the recent past, the United States and our allies have worked tirelessly to peacefully dismantle North Korea's nuclear program and alleviate the suffering of its people. But at every step of the way, North Korea answered with our overtures, with willful deception, with broken promises, and nuclear and missile tests, including a failed missile test they attempted just this past Sunday. As President Trump has made clear to the world, the era of strategic patience is over. At the President's direction, the policy of the United States will be to continue to work diligently with Japan, our allies across the region, China, and the wider world to bring economic and diplomatic pressure to bear on the regime in North Korea. And we will do so until they abandon their nuclear and ballistic missile programs. But as all of you know, readiness is the key. And you, the instruments of American policy, should know. All options are on the table. History will attest, the soldier does not bear the sword in vain. And those who would challenge our resolve or our readiness should know. We will defeat any attack and meet any use of conventional or nuclear weapons with an overwhelming and effective American response. The United States of America will always seek peace, but under President Trump, the shield stands guard, and the sword stands ready.
Mike Pence aboard the USS Ronald Reagan. On Thursday, the U.S. dropped the MOAB, the Massive Ordnance Air Blast bomb in Afghanistan, killing at least 94 people, including at least four IS group leaders. This is according to an Afghan official. Max Houtman spoke with Tyler Rogaway. He's editor of The War Zone. It's an online military column. Rogaway says using a bomb of this magnitude indicates a more aggressive stance.
The GBU-43 Bravo Massive Ordnance Air Blast, affectionately known as the mother of all bombs. It's never been used in combat before. Why now? And why in Afghanistan?
Well, you know, the weapon was kind of built in an urgent need back in 2002. So we have about 15 years later, you know, in Afghanistan, where ISIS had been using a series of tunnels and rough fortifications built into the side of a mountain. It's best if it's kind of in a mountainous terrain. And why that is it focused the blasts and it also contains the blast. So it doesn't, you know, keep rolling off the shockwave into areas where there's innocent people.
This may have been the perfect tactical use of the weapon, but what is the psychological message that it sends?
And it's actually great you bring that up, because that is the secondary effect of this weapon. Was the blast is so massive, the shockwave rolls on for a couple miles before it stops being able to do major damage. So, you know, there's no running, there's no hiding. It's that sort of a weapon. It's big, it's dumb, and it's deadly. So you're going to have other ISIS fighters go and see what happened. In other words, it's going to get out. And like I say, it's not a pretty scene. You know, devastation, like you can't imagine what these weapons can do. So I think that there's a strong psychological effect. I think there's a psychological effect on the American people, because I think the average Joe doesn't really realize we're still there. And maybe this was in some ways a reminder, you know, not intended, to remind the American public that, hey, there's another war going on and there's lives at risk. Every day there's lives at risk over there. And I think we've forgotten that to a large degree.
President Trump's been pretty clear that he's given total authorization to the military.
We have the greatest military in the world, and they've done a job as usual. So we have given them total authorization. And
that's a shift from the prior administration. What is this signal for U.S. military actions moving forward?
Well, you know, it's interesting you ask that, because usually I'm almost putting the weight on the American mindset right now. I'm surprised that America has been so open to these uses of military technology, you know, like the Tomahawk strike. Now we got this bomb. Using our weapons to put massive pressure on North Korea. But it seems like, at least from my point of view, that there's very little pushback. How far it goes, as far as, like I say, he's given free rein to the military or not, we have to get to find out. And hopefully we can know more as the administration goes past 100 days here.
Tyler Rogaway with The War Zone, thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Thanks to Max Houtman. The U.S. estimates 600 to 800 IS fighters are in Afghanistan, mostly in Nangarhar, where the MOAB was dropped. The U.S. has concentrated on fighting the IS fighters there while also supporting Afghan forces against the Taliban. More than 8,000 U.S. troops are in Afghanistan. The U.S. has been there since it invaded the country after September 11th. The current president, Ashraf Ghani's office, said that there was close coordination between the U.S. military and the Afghan government on the MOAB operation. They were careful, they say, to prevent any casualties. Dropping the MOAB cost U.S. taxpayers millions. Earth Girl Nikki tweeted, "Hard to watch, 314 mil spent on bombs instead of education, medical research, childhood hunger, environment, and healthcare. Hashtag Afghanistan, hashtag MOAB." And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio. This is WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. Gold Goldman Sachs sucks. That was the message outside their offices from activists last night protesting along with swamp monsters. They are outraged over Goldman Sachs dodging taxes and taking resources away from working people.
My name is Rahel Baru. Our government and the MTA took loans from Goldman Sachs and other Wall Street banks before the housing crisis and before the financial crisis. The fees for these loans skyrocketed, and so, you know, every year the MTA raises our fares, but we don't get any sort of improvement in services. When we do, it's from the federal government. So, like, Goldman Sachs is screwing over the federal government and our local government by the ways they have rigged the laws and tax laws.
Juan Armour, I live in Brooklyn. We don't want Goldman Sachs and our government, and we definitely don't want them in our community. $10 billion could go a long way, help with our education, help with our housing, help in general with the hospitals. You know, we're in dire need right now.
Goldman's use of tax loopholes and their roles in company mergers and acquisitions has contributed to a loss of over $10 billion in tax revenue. That's between 2008 and 2015, according to a new report by New York Communities for Change. It finds that Donald Trump's proposed budget aims to cut over $6 billion in funding for the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, $2 billion to be slashed from the housing budget. Popular programs like community development block grants used to fund low-income housing, fight segregation, and address other priorities would be eliminated. According to the report, at least $1.6 billion in cuts are aimed specifically at New York. New York will face a loss of 20,000 Section 8 vouchers, which low-income tenants use to subsidize rents. NYCHA, the largest public housing program in the country, is already facing emergency-level capital needs, and under Trump's budget, it would suffer even more. New York Communities for Change say the proposed budget cuts will lead to mass homelessness in New York. At the same time, the Trump administration, filled with Goldman Sachs alums, is trying to cut corporate tax rates in ways that would benefit their bottom line. Trump proposes to cut the corporate tax rate to just 15% from the statutory 35% rate that it is currently. This doesn't sit well with New Yorkers in front of Goldman Sachs.
My name is Frida Steinberger, and I'm a school psychologist, and I also teach part-time in the CUNY system, too. The tax monies that they should pay is enormous compared to regular people like us, and we need this money for housing, for health, you know, for education.
Okay, my name is Ian Ostasio, and I'm an intern at Sponsors for Educational Opportunity. I'm here today because Goldman Sachs did not pay their taxes in almost from 2008 to 2015, in a total of $10 billion. That's a lot of money that could be going into our communities and our public schools, and, you know, helping out the people who are less fortunate and most vulnerable to New York.
My name is Elzora Cleveland, and I'm an accountant by trade, but I'm an organizer and a community leader as well. I'm here because I pay my taxes regularly. I'm happy to contribute to my country, to my city, to my state. And it is not okay for organizations like Goldman Sachs to find loopholes to avoid paying taxes. An organization that was able to find the loopholes for a corporation to avoid paying taxes has now taken 5 seats in our government. One of their top guys is the right hand, the second guy in charge to the President of the United States. I'm frightened by what's to come. Other corporations will be trained on exactly how to avoid paying taxes, and how will that will devastate our communities, devastate our country. And it's not fair and it's not right. It's just devastating what will happen. The outcomes will be horrific. The hits on housing and infrastructure. There are so many things that paying taxes does for our country. I can't imagine that we would have an organization that's found a way to get around it, leading this country. Getting legislation passed right now is very difficult because of the administration that we're under. But the goal is to continue to push. That's what we do. As citizens, as organizers, we bring the people, we educate them, and we make sure that we push for legislation as hard and for as long as we must. Because at the end of the day, for an adult like myself, it's really about shaping the future for our children.
Thanks to WBAI's Dominique Jack and Akim Kilik for collecting the voices of our listeners. And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. A member of the Sikh community, a New York City taxicab driver, has been attacked and his turban has been stolen. This was during a confrontation with a drunk passenger. Police are investigating the incident as a possible hate crime. The driver, the Queens resident, is Harkirat Singh. He picked up three men and a woman, all in their 20s, early Sunday morning from Madison Square Garden. They asked to be driven to an address in the Bronx, which Singh asked them to enter into his GPS. When they arrived at the destination, they complained he had taken them to the wrong address, but could not give him a straight answer on where they wanted to go. The passengers then began hurling insults and banging on the plastic divide in the cab, according to Singh. They called him Ali Baba. He told them to pay him the fare owed to him and find another cab. At that point, one of the men got into the front seat of the cab, tried to smash the meter, punch Singh, and grabbed his turban and left with it. Police said they are looking for the suspect but want to talk to other people in the group. Removing the turban is one of the biggest insults that can be imposed on a member of the Sikh community. WBAI's Rebecca Miles spoke to Rajdeep Singh Jolly. He's Managing Director of Programs for the Sikh Coalition.
So I just wanted to get your comment as an organization on the latest assault against, in this case, a Sikh New York taxi cab driver who picked up passengers early Sunday morning, and during a confrontation or the attack, his turban was ripped off his head and stolen. And on, without knowing the more details on it, and the police are investigating this to see whether it could be considered a hate crime. What I know the man is very upset, but what, how insulting is it to have someone, a Sikh, to have his turban stolen?
Well, it's one of the biggest insults that can be imposed on a Sikh. The turban is an integral and inseparable part of Sikh religious identity, and an attack on the turban is considered a grave, grave insult.
And what about this latest attack in the context of multiple attacks that have happened against Sikhs since 9/11, and how continued misunderstanding happens while these attacks should be condoned fully anyway? But what about why this keeps happening?
Well, first of all, I want to emphasize that violence against Sikhs, hate crime against Sikhs, is not exclusively a post-9/11 phenomenon. And it's not exclusively tied to anti-Muslim bias. For example, as early as 1907, as early as the early 20th century, Sikhs were subjected to violence and discrimination because of who they were, because they wore turbans, because they were perceived as different, as foreign, as alien. And so it's very important for your listeners to understand that violence against Sikhs has been something we've been dealing with for more than a century in this country. Certainly, hate crime against Sikhs has accelerated in the post-9/11 phenomenon because the prevailing stereotype is that if someone wears a turban, they're somehow associated or affiliated with Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Whereas the reality is that the overwhelming majority of Americans who wear turbans are Sikhs.
Right. And is your organization, apart from condemning this attack, are you planning to do anything? Have you got any protests planned? And what can you do?
In the long term, in the broader context of violence and discrimination, not just against Sikhs, but other minorities, we want to call on the New York City administration to strategize about ways to prevent hate crime. I think the infrastructure is in place to respond to hate crime. So, you know, you've got a hate crimes unit at the NYPD. There is a process for investigating these crimes and bringing the perpetrators to account. But as a larger societal matter, I think we collectively need to start thinking about how to prevent hate crimes from occurring in the first place. And one idea is to work very closely with schools, our schools, not just in New York City, but around the country, to inculcate or infuse into our kids a deep appreciation for other people who may look different and who may believe different things. I think it's one thing to sort of react to hate crimes after the fact, but I think the bigger challenge for us, and really the need of the hour in our times, is to prevent these crimes from occurring in the first place. And that requires us at an early age to work with our children to build into them a culture or sense of respect and appreciation for other people.
That was Rajdeep Singh Jolly from the Sikh Coalition talking to WBAI's Rebecca Miles. In other news, on Saturday, dozens of drug policy researchers and their allies will travel from New York to Washington. They'll participate in the National March for Science. Andrea Sears reports.
Drug policy should be based on facts, not fear. That's one of the messages scientists, academics, and their allies will be taking to Washington, D.C. this Saturday. Responding to the rise of alternative facts, the National March for Science is being promoted as a call for policymakers to enact evidence-based policies in the public interest. Julie Netherland with the New York-based Drug Policy Alliance says too often drug policy is driven by fear and misinformation rather than science and facts.
It's why we've seen things like the disastrous war on drugs and a lot of punitive policies that have had absolutely no effect in their stated goals of reducing drug use.
Advocates fear a new emphasis on law and order in the Trump administration may roll back recent progress toward treating drug use as a public health issue. As an example, Netherland notes that during his presidential campaign, Donald Trump called for a national stop and frisk program.
So there are a lot of concerning signs that they are going to head in the wrong direction, just at a time where we're making real gains to have a drug policy that was more based in research and science.
New York City's stop and frisk program targeted mostly young Black and Latino men and arrested thousands for nonviolent drug offenses. Rather than law enforcement, Netherland believes the United States should embrace what she calls a harm reduction approach to drugs, including safer injection facilities where addicts have a clean environment with access to treatment.
Those are interventions that have been used in Canada and Europe and have shown to reduce overdose deaths, to reduce the transmission of bloodborne diseases, and have a host of really positive outcomes.
On Saturday, about 50 drug policy scholars and allies from New York will join with dozens more from across the country in Washington, D.C. to march for science. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
And finally, Fox News has decided to drop Bill O'Reilly from their lineup. This follows reports that five women had been paid millions of dollars to keep quiet about harassment allegations. 21st Century Fox issued a statement today which said after a thorough and careful review of the allegations, the company and Bill O'Reilly have agreed that Bill O'Reilly will not be returning to the Fox News channel. He had been scheduled to return from vacation next Monday. O'Reilly was photographed in Rome shaking Pope Francis's hand today. This while protests have been held all week by Now New York in front of Fox headquarters in Manhattan and by Refuse Fascism. Here's Sansara Taylor.
The sexual predator in chief in the White House has come out and said he's a good guy. And I say when somebody who is such a known misogynist as Donald Trump comes to your defense, and when you've been a mouthpiece for that presidential regime, as Bill O'Reilly has been and Fox News has been, it is mandatory on people, women and men and people across this country to stand up and say no. We won't tolerate this in the culture of the hatred towards women. But also, I'm here because I see this as part of a whole fascist program that has the hatred of women as a cornerstone. It's being imposed on America right now. The attacks on immigrants, the roundups, the anti-Muslim ban, the nuclear roulette that Trump is playing. We're in a very dangerous time. Women are in the crosshairs, so this is one of many places we need to stand up.
Sansara Taylor with Refuse Fascism outside Fox headquarters. With news of his dismissal, columnist Lauren Wolf tweeted, hashtag Bill O'Reilly is out at Fox News. Now he's free to become president. Hashtag sexual harassment. And that's the WBAI Evening News for Wednesday, April 19th, 2017. The news was produced with Dominique Jack, Akeem Killick, Rebecca Miles, Max Hauptman, Andrea Sears, and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
He's a Democrat.